It was just so beautiful. Like, I'm a melancholy person just by nature. So for me, it was like the most beautiful thing I've ever witnessed. Because, yeah, I feel like a lot of life is just grief. And it's so beautiful, but life is really, it's sad. Like, there's loss in everything. And I'm very sensitive to that, even in like the smallest detail. So to be able to bear witness to such a huge grief in my sister, who is also one of my best friends, it was crazy.
Hello and welcome. My name is Liz Gleason. I'm a psychotherapist who specializes in loss and grief. You're listening to the Shapes of Grief podcast. Shapes of Grief is a curation of stories from international guests who share their unique experience of loss and grief. It's a privilege to hold these conversations, and I extend my deepest gratitude to all my guests. I know that some of you listeners want to learn more about this landscape of loss and grief. If you're interested, check out our online grief training program on shapesofgrief.com. And please do sign up for our free masterclass available at the link in the show notes.
And in the dead of night, my darling, find the gleaming eye of starling, like the little aviator, sing your heart to all dark matter.
Welcome to Shapes of Grief. I'm Liz Gleason, and I'm joined this week by Kate Kiesel. Kate, you're very welcome.
Thank you for having me.
And Kate is coming to me from New Jersey, where you're visiting your family. And yeah. But Kate, normally you live in Germany.
I do. I live in a city called Darmstadt, which is like 30 minutes outside of Frankfurt.
Yeah. Okay, and by that name, I'm guessing you met a German man.
Is I did. Right? Yeah. Our families met when I was like 1 year old.
No
and then
way.
We connected later in life. Yeah.
Oh, goodness. I want to hear a bit of that story.
Yeah. His parents came to the States for 1 year for his father's job. And his mom dragged him to church, my husband, looking for friends and community, and said, "We're German. We're here for a year. We need friends." And then they were introduced to my grandfather's sister because their parents were from Germany. And then my husband's parents became best friends with my grandparents. So then it was just this lifelong friendship that, I saw his parents my whole life. Didn't see him for like 26 years. And then we reconnected actually right after my sister got diagnosed with cancer. So he came in for all of it.
Okay, so he knows this really important part of your life.
Yeah.
So tell me about Hannah. Hannah was your sister, is your sister, mm-hmm. who died having had cancer for many years.
Yeah.
I understand from your book. I'm holding Kate's book here in my hand, and I absolutely love the title, mm-hmm. I Would Live For You. I Would Live For You. So,
so right?
So beautiful.
Yeah.
Tell me about her. Tell me about Hannah.
Sure. Hannah was my younger sister. She is my younger sister. And she's 5 years younger than me. We are from a family of six kids. So she's the fifth. And she was very strong personality. From birth, she was just like a tough cookie, really independent and brave, not afraid of anybody. She could be argumentative because she was so passionate about the truth and she wasn't afraid to speak it. So she was the little kid who was fighting with all the bullies in class and saying like no one would stand up for her. So I did. And that's very much carried throughout her whole life. She was athletic, an artist herself, and yeah, just a very fierce, beautiful person. She had a softness that was immense, but she like covered it with this hard exterior, feeling she needed to protect herself and take care of herself. And then as she was sick and the sicker she got, And the more she needed to like surrender and ask for help from like my mom and some family members, and the softness just started to come out again, I guess, because she felt safe. And yeah, so that was so beautiful to see. And just to see like how strong and brave she remained, even when she let the softness come to the surface.
Tell me about her diagnosis, Kate.
Yeah.
What happened, Hannah?
So she was diagnosed years ago. She was having pain in her stomach, and then she thought maybe it was an ovarian cyst. So she was heading back to university in Tennessee. I took her to the OB and he took a sonogram, decided he needed to do a biopsy. And yeah, we thought it was no big deal. And then he called, I guess, a week or so later and said to my mother, you need to take her to an oncologist immediately because there's a big problem. And then, yeah, that's where it started.
I can imagine life just changed dramatically for your whole family.
Yeah, it was crazy. I, at the time, was planning to move out of state to Maine to go work on a farm and had all the arrangements settled. And then when I found that out, I didn't feel like I could leave. Like I wanted to walk through it with her. So yeah, that was interesting. Even just to learn like how to walk through a cancer diagnosis, a terminal diagnosis, when you want to be involved, but it's not your journey. So like learning how to walk alongside, but also not take things personally and give them the space to react however they react.
So you've two things going on. You've got her journey, Hannah's journey through this illness. Did she know it was terminal? Did she know she would die from this cancer?
Well, not at first, because when my mom told her, we were all the siblings and my parents were there to tell her, and they didn't know it would be terminal at that point. They just knew it was something very aggressive because of how many tumors she had. And then she was devastated. I think when you are the sick one, you know, like what's going on, because she was just devastated. And she says that she knew. And my mom said that she knew, but we didn't know that it was mesothelioma until they started going to specialists.
Okay.
Yeah.
So on one hand, you've got your sister who's living this reality, and it's her body and it's her life journey.
Yeah.
You're not going through that, but mm-hmm. you're going through this, your own personal journey of, my sister is ill, seriously yeah. ill. My parents are different. My yeah. family is different. Mm-hmm. I can't carry this for her. But how do I carry it with her? Will you tell us a little bit about what that was like for you, Kate?
Yeah, it was pretty horrible, to be honest. For me, like, I always choose a relationship over, I don't know, going and doing what I want. Like, I really wanted to move and do something new, but I felt like it was the wrong thing to do in the moment. So for me, I was struck with this, like the tension of choosing my sister over this like fun farm adventure. And yeah, so I just really wanted to be there for her. But I learned that when someone is met with such devastating suffering, like they're not even really there a lot of the time. And she was just so overwhelmed by that darkness that I couldn't get in, because she couldn't let anybody in. And then there was like navigating the relationship between she and my mother, because my mother is going to be her full-time care. And so they were very close, as they should be, as they're fortunate to have that, you know? But for me in the beginning, I felt hurt. I felt left out. And I think when you have a sibling who's so sick, then you start to feel invisible. because everything is focused on this, like, we have to save this person. And yeah, even though I agree with that in the moment, I mean, I'm still human. So it was a process for me to learn how to be there, but also be there for myself and continue to live my life. And yeah.
And adjust to so many new family dynamics.
Yeah.
When a diagnosis like this lands, everything can change for individuals and for a family. And I'm wondering, how was it for you? Did you become more anxious, more settled? How did you change? How did this impact you?
I'm realizing now that it exposed an anxiety I think I always carried, but I was just constantly checking out of my body to survive. And yeah, now that it's over and she's passed, and my father passed in the meantime of her being diagnosed until today. And so it's just been so much trauma over the past 5 years, mostly, that now that everything has settled, I see all the anxiety that I've been carrying, but just kind of ignoring. And my body is like telling the story.
Would you be willing to say a little bit more about that, Kate?
Yeah.
You said that you checked out of your body while you were going through Hannah's illness alongside her. What did that look like for you?
Yeah. In the beginning, it started as like, okay, I'm going to drop everything and just be available for this person. So I think right away, it was cutting off from myself. And what do I feel? And so mostly then just continuing to work and in my free time, make myself available to my sister, and bouncing back and forth between wanting to be there and then feeling invisible and wanting to get away. And so I think that was a stress on my body. Shortly after she was diagnosed, I reconnected with my husband, my now husband. And so we started a courtship and we were writing emails to each other for the first few months. And so that for me was something that helped me get back into my body, because I would write him emails at the end of every day and he wanted to know what was going on. He cared and was interested. So yeah, just the act of writing helped me bypass having to speak the words out. And that was very helpful in the process.
And he was someone who you weren't invisible to. He wanted to hear your story and your experience, which is, I mean, it's so understandable. But how many people do become invisible in the shadow of somebody else's illness?
And it got to the point where I just knew, like, I was living with my mom and my sister at that point, and I knew I needed to move on, because it was becoming very, just destructive. And I couldn't live in this atmosphere of like so much focus being on keeping this other person alive. So once I did move out, it was much better. It freed up space to, just be a person myself. Yeah. And I had my husband who cared about me. And I did an extreme move. I moved to Germany, like 1 year after she was diagnosed. It's how everything came about. We got engaged and then I moved, and it was really hard to move so far. But in some ways, I think it was necessary for me to not have the option to get lost in her story.
Hmm.
Yeah.
And did Hannah understand that?
Yeah.
She thinks about you going to Germany.
She was as supportive as I think she could have been because she was still drowning in it at that point, like the shock of what her life was turning into. Because she spent her first year going to doctors and being told that she would live for 6 months. And she was fighting that and then trying to find an alternative path. And yeah, so she was pretty heavy into her life. And she was kind about me wanting to live my own life. And that's what she would want for me and for everybody in the family. I think it was more me giving myself permission to do that.
You said that Hannah was lost to you, lost to the illness, and that she was desperately trying to find a way out of this life that had been imposed on her, and to survive this.
Hi everyone, excuse this brief interruption. It's Liz here, and I wanted to tell you about my grief training program. If you are interested in becoming grief literate or grief trained, I've designed a comprehensive online program which you can do at your own pace in your own time. It's been designed primarily for healthcare providers, but we all have a right to grief training and education. So if you're interested, then it's for you too. Sign up today at shapesofgrief.com. Now, back to the podcast.
Did you ever get her back?
We got her back, yeah, I would say like 6 months before she died. Because she did this massive surgery about a year after being diagnosed. And then there was the rehab from that. And then once she was like her body was healed from that and she was getting scans and she was declared cancer-free. She immediately moved back to Tennessee to finish her university degree and to work. And now I see that she was just trying to live as much of her life as she could. But at the time, even though you're so happy that your sister's cancer-free, she's going to live again, I felt like then she just disappeared. And wanted to just do live as much as she could in the amount of time that she had, and which is so fair. But again, relationships are so complicated that at some point I felt sad because I just missed her.
I love your honesty, Kate. I love
Thanks.
your honesty because there's nothing easy about accompanying a loved one who has cancer. It can be really, really challenging. And it changes relationships, and the dynamics have to be constantly renegotiated.
And then there was a point like when she then got a scan showing that she had tumors everywhere again. She had to move back in with my mom. She had graduated and she had built up her life again back there. And so that was also again devastating. And but then she hit this point where she surrendered to it more. And we both like have faith in Jesus. And I think he really met her at that point where she was willing to be met before she's a fighter. I don't know how she survived as long as she did, but that's her nature, right? Since she's born, she is just like tough. And then she hit a point where she shared that like she knew he would fight for her and she didn't need to do it completely on her own. And I think witnessing how well my mom carried her in the years prior when she was first diagnosed, she just was able to let go a little bit. And then about I would say it was like 4 to 6 months before she passed, she told me that she had this moment in the car and she writes about it in one of her poems where she just felt like she didn't want to do it anymore. She didn't want to fight anymore. She didn't have it in her. And God told her, like, I'm with you and we're going to go until we can't go anymore. And she said that changed everything for her because she realized, like, I don't have to do this by myself. And all I can do is what I can do. Mm. And I'm not in control. And I can finally let go of trying to be in control. And then she just really softened. And it was like all of these lies that get put on us since birth, like our parents, generational, you know, the lies that we do to ourselves that we believe in order to survive, like she just let go. And she became more like simultaneously like a little girl, like trusting and calm and peaceful, but still with this like wisdom that only someone who's dying can have. And yeah, she just carried such a grace. And in that time, yeah, we talked every day. And it was just like, there was no sense of urgency. Mm. She was just available and present when she could be.
So there was there's something really strong in the surrendering control. This is out of my hands.
Yeah.
You know, I have no power over this.
Yeah.
That actually brought her immense peace. You know, some people would judge that as giving up, but she wasn't giving up. She was simply stopping what was causing her suffering, which was trying to control this, something that was uncontrollable.
Yeah.
And you say, Kate, that you spoke every day. Yeah. Did you speak about her dying, her living, her wishes? What does it all mean? Did you have those conversations?
Yeah. It was amazing because she wanted to go there. Like she, in the beginning, she would say, like, does this upset you? Like, we don't have to talk about this if you don't want. And for me, like, I wanted to hear what she had to say. I feel like it's like the most valuable conversation we could have. And yeah, it's hearing her heart. So once we established that, like, I want to hear, then she would share. Yeah, and then in like November, she passed in February. So the November before, I talked to her, and it was the first time I said, like, hey, how are you feeling? And she said, like, honestly, like, not good. It's getting worse. And I'm really tired. Yeah. So at that time, I knew, like, yeah, she's kind of done. And so for me, it was learning, like, extending the grace to let her continue to share. And it was just so beautiful. Like, I'm a melancholy person just by nature. So for me, it was like the most beautiful thing I've ever witnessed. Because, yeah, I feel like a lot of life is just grief. And it's so beautiful. But life is really, it's sad. Like, there's loss in everything. And I'm very sensitive to that, even in like the smallest detail. So to be able to bear witness to such a huge grief in my sister, who was also one of my best friends, it was crazy.
But it sounds like you stepped in there and you held that space for her.
I hope, yeah.
I mean, it's really touches me, Kate, just the juxtaposition of when she was fighting her illness and sort of removed from it and wanting to get back to normal and not available to anybody and trying to control it.
Yeah.
There was a lot of suffering in the family
and
a lot of pain in the relationships.
Yeah.
And when she got very ill to the point that she couldn't do that anymore. And she was forced to accept, this is my reality.
Yeah.
And I'm not well. Yeah. And I'm not in control of this cancer. Mm. It's like you and me, you use the word grace and you use the word Jesus, but it is like this calm, this love, this availability
Yeah, so love.
Arrived between you, love.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally. And it's interesting because I think I wanted her to be there the whole time. And like, I wanted to go there with her the whole time. And there was a lot of anger because she didn't want to and she couldn't, she wasn't there. And it's only even in you saying that, that I realized like, that's why I was so hurt, because I wanted her to go there. But I kept trying to, yeah, go there and she wasn't ready, which wasn't, yeah. So it's only when she was ready to go there that that part of her story and our relationship could begin. And I think I just needed to like step back and give her the space to get there.
Yeah. And it's so true. Like, it is such a process. Yeah. You know, it takes time to get used to our new reality. You know, we have this idea, these assumptions about our future and what our future is going to look like. And when we're 20 years old or 16 years old or 18 years old, we're not planning cancer. No. And we're not planning an early death.
No.
And so when this lands, we don't order it, but it arrives. It's such a process to come to terms with this new reality.
Yeah.
And some people never do, you know.
Yeah.
Some people never do. And it's like sometimes the person who has the illness can come to terms with it, but their family doesn't.
Yeah.
And sometimes the family can come to terms with it, but the person doesn't.
And so our father got diagnosed with cancer in the midst of Hannah's journey with it. And he was exactly the opposite. Like, he didn't tell anybody at first, never told me. And he and I weren't speaking at the time. So it was like, don't tell her kind of a situation. Like, I don't want her to feel she has to talk to me just because I'm sick. So he never told anybody. He played it down the whole time. And then Hannah had seen him and she said, like, he is sick. Something is wrong. And this was in the time period where she was declared cancer free, whether she was or not, I don't know. She knew it. She had a grace for him that only like a fellow sufferer has, someone with cancer also. But then our little brother was living with our dad, and he collapsed one day and ended up in the hospital on a breathing tube for 3 weeks until he died. So it was like, I flew back from Germany, like 36 weeks pregnant, and to see him. And it was, he would never talk about it. And then here he was with this actual thing down his throat, so he couldn't speak. And the beautiful redemptive thing about his story is that he was a mess. Like, he couldn't talk about things his whole life, right? Couldn't go there. And then I just felt like God removed that. Like, okay, you're going to get a breathing tube down your throat, so talking's not even an option. So you need to just like sit in this and let your family love you rather than refusing to talk about it or sabotaging it with the hurtful things you say. And yeah, so here he was just there receiving love from his family, who he had kind of tried to evade his entire life. And it was like the most connected to him I ever felt, just with like physical touch and his eyes. But to see the juxtaposition, I share that with, because Hannah went there. She wanted to talk about it. And he wouldn't talk about it. He was just in denial, I guess. I don't know.
And it's so ironic because so many people won't talk about serious illness or dying because they don't want to upset the other person.
That was totally it.
But it causes so much pain at times, not for everyone.
Yeah.
It can cause so much pain not to talk about it.
Yeah. It's scary, but it's so worth it.
Did you have a moment of connection with your dad before he died?
Yeah, I got to apologize. And it was just like, yeah, it was like the most special moment I ever had with him. So I'm very grateful, because if I didn't have that, it would have been a different, more complicated grief.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm glad you had that moment.
Yeah, thank you.
Kate, tell me about the book.
Yeah.
This is the book that Hannah started writing when she was alive, like poems about her experience with cancer.
Yeah.
Take us through that.
Sure. So it's a collection of, I believe, like 62 poems and just musings, different writings that she had done. And they were not written for the book, actually. For her, poetry was like this secret conversation she had with herself and with God. So she had been writing for years. So it's a collection of some poems that were written before she was diagnosed, all the way to before she died. So I would say like 97% of them were just for herself.
Okay.
Just the processing of what was going on in her life. And we always shared what we were making with each other. I work with textiles and on a weaving loom. Yeah. And so I would always just ask her, like, what are you working on? What are you making? She also did ceramics. So we just shared this connection of art and art therapy, really, like in the not clinical way, just in for our own studio practice. So it was about the time where I said that she like surrendered to her illness, and she softened and decided she was just going to spend her days doing things that brought her joy. And I suggested, like, why don't we put your poetry together and try to get it published? So she was open to that, and it never really happened. And then when I visited her in Christmas, so the December before she passed in February, before I got there, I said, like, I really want to work on this book. You've been lonely this whole time, because most people with terminal cancer are older, she found. And with mesothelioma, it was like older men. So she just felt like, I go to these support groups, I can't connect, because these people are either have lived their lives, or they're young and they're getting their life back. I'm not. So yeah, that was my suggestion. Like, let's make a book of your poetry and treat it as like a friend for somebody who's going through a similar situation, and they won't be as alone as you were. And then you also get to, yeah, leave behind something, because she felt, since she was dying for so long, that she wasn't leaving anything and dying so young. So then, yeah, I asked her to write a few pieces, like the foreword, and then she wrote, I think, a few, like three poems maybe. And we talked about the cover. What would you want for the cover design? And cherry blossoms have been in her story and her artwork forever. So that just came to my mind, like, let's do this. We have a friend who's an amazing oil painter, and we commissioned him to make the painting. And that's an amazing story, because so we reached out to commission him, and then it would be treated as a gift for my mother, the painting. And he said he wanted to do it just as a gift. So that was just like so much love and generosity. And it went from there. And then in like the last weeks of her life, because I got to be with her till the end, she was just so weak. And she had given me 6 poems, and she said, like, go through everything, do what you want. Like, I trust you. Whatever you think, like, you know my voice, you know my heart, you know my aesthetic, out of everybody, she said, I trust you. And you have like my full permission to go, just do what you think. And so that's what I did. And like the week or two before she died, she had this huge canvas and she wanted to paint. And she told me, like, don't tell anyone, but this is what I'm going to call a painting. And it was, I Would Live for You. So that's what, as soon as she passed, I was like, that's the title. And I went through months later, not right away, when I came back in the summer, her journals, the notes on her phone, and just collected all of these poems. And then I printed them all out. I sat with them and then would just like pray before I worked on it. And then they all like really just lit up and moved to where they wanted to be. And it was so amazing because it all tells her story and aligns like with her timeline, her testimony, everything. And it was unintentional. It's just like the power of art making and
surrender, getting out of the way,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah.
And let the process happen. Do you have a favorite poem, Kate?
I do. I have a, there's many I love. Let's see. I really love the one that I put in last. Can I read it to you?
Please do.
Okay. It's untitled, and she writes, to return to the earth from which you came, how beautiful to think that my last gift to the world will be myself. And yeah, I love it so much because she wrote that before we ever talked about the book. And so I know that she's talking about her physical body. But then I just thought how beautiful, like this dream she had to share her poetry. Like that's her last gift, I feel. It's like this offering of herself and this pouring out of herself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's so moving. Yeah. And Kate, I'm so aware there's going to be people listening who have never been through this.
Yeah.
Who will face it at some stage, or maybe who are going through this.
Yeah.
There's a loved one who's got cancer and they don't know what the outcome is going to be.
Yeah.
What words of wisdom would you share to those people listening?
I think the biggest thing I learned is not to take anything personally as you accompany somebody in great suffering, and to just know that like there are moments where they are just like lost in the darkness of their suffering. And if you can step outside of that and just love them and like help them find the light, even if it's just for a few moments a day, you're making a huge difference. And just the act of showing up, even if they're mad at you, when you show up and make the effort is huge. Yeah, she would say like some of her friends would come by and it would be awkward or she wouldn't be in the mood. And sometimes she would ask them to leave. And then later when she felt a little better, she would be moved to tears and or laughing and just say like, that was so cute that they came and I was so rude to them, but it's where I was at. And I'm so grateful that they come, even though I'm not always nice or I don't always want to see them. Yeah.
And that's the reality of it, isn't it? It's difficult. It's hard. It challenges relationships. You lose friendships.
Yeah.
But if we can keep showing up, showing up and loving them, it sounds so easy.
Yeah.
It isn't.
Not at all.
Well, Kate, thank you so much for sharing your experience with us today. I know of a few people who might listen to this and who hopefully will get something out of it. Yeah. The key takeaway, I think, is, you know, the talking, the opening, the being honest. Yeah. You describe it as going there.
Yeah.
Go there.
Yeah.
Turn towards, face it.
Yeah.
And it will be a much deeper, softer, gentler experience for everyone.
Yeah, she taught us all so much about love and grace just by being open. And yeah, I'm very grateful.
Your book, I Would Live For You, is it for sale online?
Yeah, it's on Amazon globally.
Super. So yeah. We can put a link to it in the description for today.
Thank you.
If you have an image of the cherry blossom cover, that would be really nice to share with listeners as well.
Sure.
And do send me a photo of you and Hannah.
I will.
That would be lovely to see her face.
Yeah, thank you so much for talking with me and asking me questions. It feels so nice to be asked these questions and to share.
You like talking about Hannah?
I love it, yeah.
And that's a message for anybody who's listening, who thinks, I better not ask them about their loved one because it might upset them.
Yeah. Yeah, I shared that last night talking to my mom. She said, are you nervous to talk on a podcast? And I said, yeah, a little bit, but it also gives me the opportunity to talk about Hannah, whereas either I'm with my fellow grievers and there's not that kind of questions being asked, or friends who are afraid to talk about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's quite the opposite. It's such a gift when we invite someone to talk about their person who's died.
Yeah, so thank you for that.
Yeah. And I hope to talk to your mom one of these days as well, when she's going to dip her toe in the world of podcasts as well.
Yeah.
Kate, thank you so much. And thank you for letting us meet Hannah a little bit through you. She sounds like an amazing woman.
Yeah, thank you, Liz.
Take care now. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Shapes of Grief. The podcast is not a substitute for professional medical or psychological advice, so if your grief is making you unwell, please do see your healthcare provider. I know that some of you want to learn more about the experience of loss and the process of grieving, either for yourself or for someone you support. You can become grief trained by signing up on shapesofgrief.com. Use the code PODCAST15 for 15% off today. The beautiful music is called The Lost Words Blessing, and we have kind permission to use it for the Shapes of Grief podcast. Until the next time, from me, Liz Gleason, take really good care.
Enter the wild with care, my love, and speak the things you see. Let new names take and root and thrive and grow. And even as you travel far from heather, crag and river, may you like the little fisher set the stream alight with glitter. May you enter now as otter without falter into water. Look to the sky with care, my love, and speak the things you see. Let new names take and root and thrive and grow. And even as you journey on past dying stars exploding like the gilded one in flight, leave your little gifts of light. And in the dead of night, my darling, find the gleaming eye of starling. Like the little aviator, sing your heart to all dark matter. Thank you. through the world with care, my love, and sing the things you see. Let new names take and root and thrive. Swim you deeper, oh my little silver seeker, even as the hour.